Philadelphia, Philadelphia, are you ready? City of brotherly love, home of smoking Joe Frazier. Come on. It's about that time. FetLifeStation.com. Philly Fridays, baby. Come on.
This is my first simulcast of the latest edition of Office Hours. We were not only tuning through our home station, our home network of Fet Life Station at FetLifeStation.com, but we're also coming to you on YouTube and on Facebook.
What?
That's right. YouTube and Facebook.
What?
So I'm not sure what it's going to look like because I really am trying something here, trying something new. But let's just see what it does. So it's currently 2 minutes after the hour. The temperature here in Philadelphia is a cool 83 degrees. Not too bad. You know, not too crazy. And, we here. So it's been a wild and crazy week. As I told some of you before, I had I was invited to be part of a memorial service. My good brother, Eric Coleman, who passed away last week. And it was a truly special occasion where we got to, you know, celebrate our good brother's life. So I just want to say a shout out to, you know, his surviving family, his wonderful wife, and son, who are taking in the mantle, maintaining the legacy of his brother and his good works. My brother was always helping. So I hope that in the process of the passing, more people will, you know, be able to utilize that spirit, you know what I'm saying, and maintain it amongst themselves. It's been an interesting week though, because one of the things that I had intended on talking about today, well, one of the things that I was going to talk about, they had to slide down in a rotation because we were awakened to some terrible news, unfortunately. Those of you who are familiar here in Philadelphia with Gilly the Kid, or now he's Gilly the King, and Wallow and their new podcast that they've been working on for the last few years, and their explosion in not just the social media, but it's really become celebrity. Fortunately, woke up to the news this morning that Gilly's son was murdered overnight. And this is never good. You see somebody who, you know, when a person has to witness or bear witness to the death, the untimely death of their children. It was just ironic to me that on this particular day a year ago, I was able to do a broadcast. And it spoke about another young brother from my neighborhood who unfortunately was murdered And, you know, it was just an eerie experience, an eerie feel, because we actually did a podcast about it. And one of the things that I want to talk about is, you know, at this particular time, people are going to express their remorse. People are going to express their heartfelt condolences. And we'll hear all the cries. If something has to change, something has to change. And I'm going to speak to it. Something really does have to change. But talk is cheap. We can consistently say something has to change. But until we become those agents of change, then there's no agency in any of the words we speak. And it shouldn't take a well-known person's family to be harmed in any way to get the collective of us to start funneling through those words and make those words make sense, turn those words into action. A lot of times when we say things like that, we hope somebody else picks up the mantle and they become the agent of change that we can cheer from the sideline while we're sitting back sipping on our brew or knocking down, you know, stogies or cognac or whatever. But we're not actually willing to put in the sweat equity, the financial investment, the time investment to make those things happen. And it's only when it happens either to somebody too close to us or somebody that's well known and well regarded that we start having these cries for help and cries for change. But at some point, you have to be the change you wish to see in the world. While I'm not a fan of Mahatma Gandhi, I do recognize that those words ring true. You have to be the influence. You have to be the one picking up the bricks and moving and mixing the mortar. You have to be the one with the game plan to make this thing happen. The blueprint. The blueprint is only valuable if you put the blueprint to work. Start building, starting with the foundation. And a lot of times we don't want to do the foundational work. We just want a microwave solution to these problems. So, like I said, rest in peace, Cheese, and my heartfelt condolences to Gillian's family. I sure hope that something good comes of this, even though this is the time for prayer, time for comfort for the family. So, you know, it's been an interesting week for some other reasons, too. And I was having a conversation with a good brother of mine. And one of the things I was saying in that conversation was, you know, bro, I'm really tired of having this conversation. I'm really tired of talking about these gender issues because I'm a nation builder. We're a nation builder. And so when we have this conversation, it sort of takes us down this dark path that we don't necessarily see an applicable solution that doesn't involve cutting off a lot of people. So, but if you're talking about nation building, you got to have some complementary people to nation build with. And the toxicity that exists in the Black community that has existed for, I would say, the better part of a century, it creates a poisonous, infectious, dysfunctional relationship between all the different demographics. It's like the Willie Lynch letter becomes our Bible. It becomes our scripture. It becomes our hymn. It becomes our gospel. But we can't avoid We can't avoid the problems that exist within us. So, one of the things that we need to talk about, and just give me 1 second, I want to double check and make sure that the link and everything is working, because you know how StreamYard is interesting. You can use StreamYard. You don't, it doesn't always come up like you think it is. So, okay, so it is up. All right. And I'm just making sure that I'm, okay, I see what's going on. It is, obviously, why is this only me? Okay, all right. Sometimes, man, you know, when you try something new, you got to do something different. So, all right, here we go. Technical stuff. But don't worry. Like our elder or ancestor now, he's an ancestor now. Kevin Samuels once said, we build it as we fly, right? So, one of the things that I want to give a major shout out to, I put a call out this past week for the brothers to give us some savory advice, right, for the young brothers that are out here. And one of the things they did was they pulled up and they were able to speak on some things and speak life into our young men. So pulling it up now because it was just so empowering to see that we got over 35 responses. So the question I asked the brothers was, I said, brothers, what advice would you have pass on to young men to sort out to the age of 25? So I'm just going to give you a few of them because, like I said, it was a lot. And what one of the brothers said, I wouldn't, Brother Cyrus, shout out to Brother Cyrus too. He said, I wouldn't use sort out. I think remind them that as a man, your responsibility is to protect and provide for the people whom share the name and that can't do it for themselves. All right. He gave some examples, but I'm going to move on a little bit. My good brother, the mayor of Harlem, as I like to call him, Martin Fig, stated that you don't have to be 40 to decide to start a business. The paradigm has shifted. And the time is now to move towards your dreams. Stay grounded and focused. And a lot of the messages was like that. You know what I'm saying? Get together as soon as possible. It's real out here as an adult. Uncle Brother Eric Manson, excuse me. And, and a lot of sisters, some sisters chimed in just for the simple fact they saw some things that were so inspirational, they wanted to share them as posts on their page. And I say this to say that when a lot of brothers are getting their act together. A lot of people, and I'm bringing this up for a purpose, for a reason, right? Because a lot of the brothers are working. Like we heard the message. I was at the Million Man March in 1995. The message was the Day of Atonement for black men to become better men. The stigma and the stereotypes of black men up until that point, leaving the communities without leaders, succumbing to the drug culture at that particular time, not being identified as predators in our community, even though those labels were also given to us as well. But understanding that we had a role to fulfill, a lot of us took that to heart. And for the last 25 years, 30 years, we've made it our business to be better men for our community. And so, the crop of black men, we're no longer in that place where we are the root of all negativity, the root of all malignant and malevolent behavior in our community. There's some things that are going on right now, but there are actually men trying to influence and change this. I had, and I don't like to put my work out there because we had some malicious people who try to, if they don't like one part of your message, they make it their life mission to destroy your life. So, but I work with a college program that's centered around the development of Black men. It says Black and brown, but we primarily focus on, the program is 90% Black men. These young brothers, I gave them a compliment, but we have our grouping and our times that we gather. And I gave them a compliment for being the face of Black men, for being positive face, the force, being rooted. Because this is typically what I see when I see young brothers, and they gather in the mass room. And I just say, you know, I need to give y'all your flowers. A lot of y'all are showing up to these programs. A lot of y'all could be out here in the streets doing God knows what, but y'all chose to be here. You come in diligently early every morning to help put yourself in a better position to be better men for the community. And they struggle with giving themselves that type of response and just receiving that. And it bothered me because when we have our young brothers out here, our community is so toxic that all they're used to hearing is about how they're no good this and they're no good that. How they're irresponsible, how they don't take accountability for things that go on in the community. And, you know, I was having a conversation with my good brother Tad Cromwell. He was talking about the fact that, you know, your attention goes where your energy flows. Meaning that if all you see is negative things happening, and typically speaking, that's because you're drawn to that negative energy. But I wanted these brothers to understand that they were worth something, they had value. So it bothered me immensely when I tuned in or I jumped on Facebook, too. I think it was maybe last week. And I've been seeing this post going around for the last little while, talking about today, this generation of men, and it was speaking specifically to Black men, want submissive sponsors. And it bothered me because when I look at the numbers, 60% of the black men, 60%, you go to blackdemographics.com, blackdemographics.org to find this out. 60% of black men are in the middle class. Less than 20 to 25% black men are responsible for over 80% of single parent households. 54% of black men up to the age of 30 are single and childless. So Black men are doing the damn thing. We don't get the credit. We're often told that we're the ones tearing down the Black community. We're the ones destroying the image of Black women. But I want to speak something about that. Ebony K. Williams has made herself relevant again. You remember Ebony K. Williams, the one who interviewed, I think it was the Alibi Sun, and she stated that she wouldn't date a bus driver unless he owned the bus. Well, she's back in the news again. This time encouraging affluent black women to volunteer to become single mothers by use of in virtual fertilization, use of sperm banks. And I find it rich that in a day and time where black men have been identified as being the root causes, or the black men have been identified as being, you know, the source of single parent homes. I find it rich that we're no longer like this concept that this is this concept of single parent household is no longer going to be something that black men even have a word in. Like we're not going to even be able to address it if this is the way it goes. We're voluntarily, with women selectively choosing to be single mothers through this process. The only saving grace I can see for brothers is that brothers aren't delivering sperm to these banks anymore. Brothers aren't donating sperm to the sperm banks. So I don't know where you're going to get it. Brothers, understand the words. These sperm banks, they're selling your sperm, the spark of life that's produced by your loins, for thousands of dollars per vial. So for one vial of your sperm, you're receiving, you might get $200-$300, but they're selling it for $2,000-$3,000 on the street. Turn around. The math ain't math. And I think a lot of brothers are recognizing their value. And it also speaks to the state of black men, economically speaking, because now you don't even have brothers who, just because they need money, going into these sperm banks, delivering, you know, their life spark, you will, to these sperm banks. So these sperm banks are scrambling. Y'all remember what happened with Brett, when her and her wife tried to have a baby? But I find it, you know, interesting, right? Because we're going to get into a few things. One thing we're going to get into is, we're going to get to this whole Carly Russell theme, but I want to, before that, I want to talk about something else, because we've been going through this whole notion, this whole process of dealing with things happening in the black community that have all been identified as, you know, we're gonna blame the men, right? We're gonna blame the men. And as Tyrese would say, what more do you want from me? Right? But one of the things that's been happening is this new renaissance of women saying that they don't need brothers. You know, and I'm not going to share the screen, but I want y'all to hear this. I want y'all to hear this. This is Kiki Palmer. Right? I remember Kiki Palmer from a situation that occurred with her baby dad, right? So this is Kiki Palmer at the first opportunity. This is her first concert, first live performance since that debacle that took place with Usher Raymond and her boyfriend, right? The very first time she came home, this is what she had to say. I believe this is the Broccoli City concert, something like that. Here you go. Technical things here, you know, technicality. All right.
Before he mad,
so if you didn't hear, she said, little booties matter. A son gave her this ass. She don't need no nigga. All she needs is to get a bag. And this is more of the toxic energy that's being put out. And it seems to be okay. Right? This is toxic energy that's being put out, and it's perfectly fine. So, there was a video going around, making its rounds on TikTok. And I'm going to play this video. I might even put it on the big screen. I think I'm going to share the screen for this video. Hold on for 1 second. All right, not looking good. So y'all just going to hear it, though. Because I'm, like, playing around with the technology. Listen to this. This is currently at a wedding where the vows are being exchanged. So I want y'all to pay attention to what you hear right here.
In sickness,
and in health,
to love,
cherish,
and to obey.
Now, I want y'all to pay attention to one thing. Now, I know I didn't show the screen. She side-eyed the pastor when she said they didn't go over this in council. Just want to pay attention there. All right. But the pastor struck back and basically stated, this is what we talked about. And let me tell you, anybody that's ever been to a rehearsal dinner, you know that every aspect of the vows and throughout the marriage counseling, these are things that are going over in earnest, discussed in earnest. So for that reaction, this is what we're dealing with now. Now, play it back one more time so y'all can hear the whole thing. And then I'm going to let y'all do whatever y'all want to do with this.
In sickness.
In sickness.
And in health.
And in health.
To love.
Cherish.
And to obey.
We did talk about that in council. Yes, we did.
So you want me to repeat that again? You want to just keep going?
I think we can keep going.
In sickness.
In sickness.
And in
health. So. And this is one of the problems that we're going to continue to see. The whole concept, and I'm not saying, but yeah, I'm going to say this. That was a strike at her man to let her know who's running things, who's going to be in charge. That is a level of disrespect that's expected in our community. This is the level of disrespect that's expected in our community in terms of men. But at the same time, the people who support this will say that men are supposed to be leaders. Well, how can you be leaders if people don't respect you enough to even follow through or to follow behind you or to take your lead? It just doesn't make sense to me. The math ain't math. And so, you know, and I know we want to get to something else real quick, but this is another aspect too, right? Because this speaks to something else that's been coming up lately. Accountability. I want y'all to hear this one real quick.
Don't want to change.
We just don't want to. Still
not giving the answer.
I just gave you the answer. Why do women get so defensive when they're called out on
because
something?
You don't want to be honest. You don't want to deal.
We don't want to change. We just don't want to deal with it.
Exactly. Like, why? Why is that an issue?
Because we kind of want to do what we want to do, and we don't see you guys. Men complain about things that are just sometimes just why. Why? Why are you upset about it? You do. And I feel like
there's something wrong.
For me.
And the only way to communicate and fix things is to adjust.
I don't like to be told
deal with it and fix it.
I don't like to be told that I'm wrong. I don't like to be told
that's established
when I'm wrong.
That's established.
So I get agitated when I find out that I'm wrong about something. Okay? I get agitated. And that's why I guess I get defensive because I just want to do what I want to do. And no, it's not always right, but that's, I just want to do what I want to do. And when you call me out, it makes me defensive because I don't even understand why you would be calling me out. It's not that serious.
Yeah. And this is what we've been dealing with. Now, this takes us to our good young sister out here. I don't know how young she is, but our good sister, Carly Russell. And I know it took a while to get here, but now that I'm here, we're going to park for a while. Because we're going to go over some of the details of this particular situation. For those of you who don't know, earlier this week, there was a massive manhunt, multi-jurisdictional, multi-state manhunt that made international news concerning a woman, black woman, we need to call it what it is, who was walking or driving down an interstate in Alabama, and she made a call to 911 stating that she had found a child in the road, a little white child in the road, and that she followed this child to 600 yards. For those of you who don't know what 600 yards look like, it's the equivalent to 6 football fields. And eventually, she made another phone call to her mother stating that, that I don't know, something that was taking place, I guess, alerting her mother to what was going on. Next thing you know, her mother heard a scream. People arrived to the scene. They found Carly's wig. They found Carly's iPhone, her watch. They found some food that she had purchased early, I believe, from her job, her workplace. But what they didn't find was the bag of snacks that she had just bought from Target on her way to that location. Now, this sparked, this thing turned into a frenzy. You had people all over the world posting pictures of Carly, posting up all these other things. And somebody else brought up something to me that I'm going to bring up in 2 seconds. 2 days go by. Mom is on the news. Dad is sitting there next to mom. My mom is on the news. Then Carly mysteriously makes it back home. She walks to her front door. Now, the word is that Carly's unconscious when she comes in. I don't know how you get to the front door and then you become unconscious, but okay. And then, you know, long story short, nobody wants to talk about anything anymore. Carly, if the family is asking for privacy, a big-ass GoFundMe was out, raised like $90,000, if I'm not mistaken. And one of the things that took place was a lot of scrutiny as more people started to wonder, okay, the details. First of all, where was the child? Second of all, who abducted you? Third of all, you know, why isn't any of this stuff making sense? It's not making sense. The math ain't that. So then slowly but surely, the police start leaking certain pieces of this case. The police started leaking video footage of Carly not stopping her car, but pulling up to the side lane, the emergency lane, and coasting, I don't know, for what, a half a mile before finding the destination. And then you see her with a bag in her hand, and see her dashing off into the woods. This story became a little fishy. And I'm going to tell you something. So more and more came out, and what it really came down to is the story didn't make sense, and everybody pretty much see that this was a scam, this was a hoax. Now, the irony behind this is that a lot of people weren't necessarily falling for this. For this to be what it was, it had too many moving parts. Abductions are really simple. When you start talking about people who are abducted, they are in a location that nobody hears from. There's no phone calls. There's no babies on the road. There's no none of this stuff. None of these things, especially on a highly trafficked road. So her story gets out. According to her, she was stashed up and had a burlap sack or something put over her face. And this ginger, this big white man with balding red hair, put her in the back of a cab in his tractor. And next thing you know, there's a white woman playing with her hair, feeding her. And, you know, they gave her $122 or something like that. Like these details. And then she made her way home. Now, the irony behind all of this is that the none of the facts measured up. And everybody knew from the police who had press conferences, this shit was a lot. And the worst part about this is, like, the most damning evidence came from her. She's Googling how to get away with it. She's Googling the movie Taken. She's Googling how much do you have to actually put money out for Amber Alerts, things of that nature. And then everybody can pretty much see where this is going. The problem came in mostly after. It's most likely she's going to face some time behind this. They've already talked about the fact that the police are just basically compiling their case together right now so that they can charge her for this, because a lot of resources went into this, false reporting went into this. You know what I'm saying? And so this is one of those things where people don't understand the gravity of this. So you had a lot of sisters primarily, because I didn't see any brothers say this, but there were some sisters who called around this shit. Yeah, they read the tea leaves. They knew that this was mostly like an attention seeking thing that she was doing. But her boyfriend had just left her. So the attention seeking part of this was to figure out how she can get out there and I don't know, make them jealous again. But this is bullshit. And a lot of us was calling it out. So we had some pushback, though, from a lot of sisters who said, first of all, all y'all were saying is y'all hope she put up prayers, hoping that she got home safe. As soon as she gets home safe, now everybody wants to have questions. It's just weird. No, what's weird is this. None of this makes sense. And when you make a public issue out of this, and the public invests their time, and the public is pulled in, roped in, because we were minding our business when this pulled up on our screens. We were minding our business when this became headline news. You had search parties out there walking in the wood with dogs and flashlights. People were invested. People put their money into the GoFundMe. Everybody who invested 5 minutes into this deserved an explanation, a rational explanation that actually helped us connect the dots. Because sex trafficking is a big deal. Black women being kidnapped and snatched off the street is a big deal. Children being involved in a sex trade is a big deal. So this woman, by performing this fraudulent act, And I'm going to tell you how slick the media is about this. Anybody that spent 2 minutes looking over this particular case understood it was fraud. But this was their opportunity to spit in the face of the black community, but more specifically black women. So let black women know that we ain't ride with y'all like y'all thought we were ride with y'all. And we're going to do this because we understand that this is going to be a huge mark on the plight of black women who may need services to help sort them out in case they are sex trafficked, in case they are putting somebody's trunk, slamming into somebody's SUV, or put in somebody's work van. Now you have single-handedly destroyed the potential credibility of all those other men, women who are legitimately missing. The horrors. You have black families who are angry about this because their resources were taken away from them finding their legitimately trafficked family members. They're legitimately the family members that they had that were legitimately snatched off the streets. And now we got this hoax. And here's the thing when we talk about women not being able to hold women accountable. And one of the reasons why I don't ask women to give advice anymore. Because y'all create all of these soft landings for women who are in violation, do things to damage your image. You can never fully hold women accountable in our community for anything they do. It's like y'all all share an arrested development with a childlike focus and a childlike manner. And a lot of you don't even have the capability of seeing past your emotions. And because you don't have the ability to see past your emotions, you allow scammers like this, a safe landing place. I know. The last person sitting in this damn chair right here, I produced her shows. And the scammer she was. Soft landing places. So, I know there's an inability. And it ain't just that. There's some sap-ass brothers out here, too. Because you don't have a backbone. And this is why I showed that wedding video, why I played the wedding video earlier. Because if that brother had any backbone, he'd have got up and walked off of the front of it. He would have walked out of the church. Or he would have canceled the wedding. And it would have just been a big-ass party. Food and drinks in it, and everybody take your gifts back and go home. But we live in an era of weak men. And because we live in an era of weak men, a lot of brothers don't have the ability to even stand up to hold our women accountable. And that's, you know, and I understand why. Because in our culture, it's something that's been in place for so long that a lot of brothers have a hard time withdrawing or pulling away from. But this Carly Russell situation, one of the reasons why it's so egregious is because why so many sisters can relate to this shit is because this is not the mental health illness that everybody's trying to call. This is the dysfunctional behavior that's shared by a lot of women in the sisterhood. So they can see themselves creating a lie and then fall into the rabbit hole that these lies produce. See, once you start off foundationally with a lie, you have to tell more lies to get on top of that lie. And the thing I think that happened with this Carly Russell situation, she didn't expect this to blow up like this. She thought it was going to be something that was local, something that was going to get her boyfriend's attention, because if you watch Six the Goddess, break that down earlier today, and the link is on my page if you'd like to see it on Facebook and Instagram. Sister Brothers, guys, broke that down beautifully in regards to her response and how that response was mostly to regain or reclaim or fight for the affections of her man. Now, and then, you know, let me just talk on this for a second, the toxic nature of our community. That brother's Instagram account is up to like 20,000 subs, like 20,000 followers. After this particular case, like, women are jumping out the truck for this dude because they want to know what's going on in between his legs to have a woman kidnap her damn self out here on the highway and create this cockamamie story that drew international following coverage. But and another thing too, and I said I was going to bring this up. All the pictures that were put out, right? This is a safety thing, right? What I'm about to talk about. all the pictures that were put out about Carly Russell, none of them look like the woman that walked back into that house. And see, ladies, this is one of the things we talk about all the time when you put on all these cosmetics, put on, you know, batters worth of makeup and cosmetics, and you put on all this hair and it doesn't look like you. Somebody can literally stumble across you in public and not recognize you. You're in a dangerous situation. Your picture's been plastered all over the place, but your picture don't look like you then. It's almost like your picture, because of what you put on your face, becomes the physical filter. So, y'all need to truly understand, like, the dangers that come if you operate like that. Operate with this need to cake and bake your makeup on. You look like somebody totally different. And then, you know, we don't recognize you out, you're out here in the public just wandering around and can't nobody find you. You walking right past you, hiding us in broad daylight. But I'm gonna this whole situation, Kiki Palmer situation was an international hit. This particular situation was international. Sisters, I've been telling y'all for the longest, y'all need to reclaim y'all image. And y'all keep excusing and provide safe landing spaces and golden parachutes for women out here destroying your image. And what's happening now is internationally speaking, this stuff is catching up with y'all. First of all, you haven't even realized the rollback on policies here in America that directly impact you. They're just, in Florida, I believe Ron DeSantis was part of a policy which ended lifetime alimony. So women, you marry somebody, you divorce them, that alimony is only going to be for a certain period of time in the state of Florida. I know a lot of women would go down to Florida to get married just because of the alimony laws. You don't have access to that anymore. The fact of the matter is, Section 8 vouchers aren't worth the paper they're printed on. You got a lot of women out here right now that are in shelters right now because they can't get into Section 8 housing. Them and their children are living in the cars, they're living in minivans, they're driving from parking lot to parking lot, to the point where police enforcement has been issued. You've been having women getting locked up because they're illegally parked and making these places a residence in the parking lots of these shopping malls. Times are getting hard. I've seen so, but the international thing, let me get to that. Because there are two cases that come to mind. I'm not sure if we talked about it last week, but I'm going to bring it back, refresh your memory. Remember the sassy trucker? That's just about the name of Tierra Allen that's in Dubai right now. They currently have her, she's about to go on trial for talking loud to a man in public. See, this type of behavior, this reputation is following women internationally. Black women, you are to have developed a reputation for being sassy, for being out of control, for being masculine. And also, as Kiki Palmer said, Hold on. Let's keep the promises. Go back to it. What did Kiki Palmer say? Yeah, Kiki Palmer. The whole world is that. It means you're uncovered, protection-wise. And so there's no hesitancy now in terms of punishing bad behavior, internationally speaking. It's just not. And then I want to give you one further. Anybody, there's a sister out that's like a traveling blogger. And she's been collecting money from people so that she can travel in like 70 countries. Her name is Mary Jane Bynum, right? Mary Jane Bynum. Anybody following that story? Mary Jane Bynum? Mary Jane is in a, she was in a hotel in Italy recently. I'm not sure if she still is. And they had told her when she came in with some food, listen, we have a no outside food policy. So if you get food, you have to get it from the hotel or eat it out where you bought it from. You can't bring it back here. Well, Mary Jane, you know, flagged the chick, went up to her room with her food. She came back down the next day, and the lady said, yo, so you violate our policy, that's going to cost you 700 euros. So that's about 750 American dollars. Now, if you don't know, she was already financially struggling because she had lost her revenue that she was getting from social media. So I think they shut down her Instagram account. I think they shut down YouTube or TikTok, one of those two. So she was losing, she lost access to that revenue. Plus, she was out here, according to some of the sisters that was following her channel and sending her money, she was scamming them out of their money. So they stopped dealing with it. So she's struggling out there. So she's out there and she told them, I'm going to do what I want to do and all this other stuff. Lady called the owner of the hotel up. The owner of the hotel pulled up with two goons, two Italian goons. She smacked postcards out the sister's hand and grabbed her by her throat, choke slammed her like Triple T off of the WWE. Said, I need that bread. I need that money. And, you know, the sister was like, yo, it wasn't cops. Sister, let me explain something to you. Organized crime might not be what it is here anymore in America. But in Italy, the Italian mafia still is the law. And guess what? They understand you're not under any protection. And because they understand you're not under any protection, they're not going to protect you. So we really need for y'all to understand. Y'all need to reclaim y'all image. Y'all need to reclaim y'all global image. Because if y'all don't do the work of reclaiming y'all global image, I promise you, it's only going to get worse. Because you've already convinced the world. You got Ebony K. Williams talking about we're going to start volunteering to be single mothers. And I, you know, honestly, that's something that's been going on longer than you know. When I was in high school, in the 80s and the 90s, they were building daycares in schools because our young ladies were choosing to get pregnant because in their mind, they wanted to feel unconditional love. And they felt like having a child could give them that unconditional love. Now, there's a lot of the women today that are complaining about deadbeat dads, but what you had back then was a lot of people getting trapped. And nobody wants to talk about it because it's not politically correct. But back in those days, man, listen, I had brothers who would walk into the rooms. Like, they would go to the bathroom and come out the bathroom back to the bedroom and see their girlfriends trying to stick little holes in the packs of condoms with pincushions, with pincushion needles. Women were literally digging into the trash to take used condoms out of the trash to inadvertently stick them into their private parts, hoping to come out with a baby. This was the 90s. This was the 80s and the 90s. Now, so the concept of women being selecting single motherhood, and I don't, hey sisters, I tell y'all all the time, I love y'all, but y'all don't have the goodness foresight. You already see the conditions of neighborhoods and communities where there's no men around. Your money, the less than 10% of you, the 4% of you that actually make six figures, that's not going to replace the presence of a man. And y'all are not going to get Dr. Umar to convince us that we should come in and step in for those types of decisions. That's not happening. So you got that going on. You got the Carly Russell situation where is if I can't have this man, nobody can have a man. So I'm going to create this scam. And I'm gonna do what I can to force this man back to my life. I'm gonna make him. I'm gonna make his protection, his fight or flight mechanism, operation or thought process kick in. Try to plan those masculine instincts that we had. Once again, shout out to 65 to point that out. Then we got sisters talking about, you know, like I said, you know, Kiki Palmer. I don't need a man. You know, I've heard other songs. I don't need a man. I don't need a man. But when shit hits the fan, then you're going to be saying that it's we, the black community. It's not going to work. Shame and tactics don't work. We've had an education in the shame and tactics, the insults, the guilt, and the need to be right. We've had a full education in that. Men are, black men in particular, are fully aware that those tactics no longer work, the shame and tactics. In fact, we need to start employing more shame and tactics on the sisters who identify as conscious leaders and thought leaders in our community as to why you're not providing corrective behaviors to our women. Why you are not offering critique. And I often know what the answer is. Oh, well, they don't listen to us, which is bullshit because you expect us to listen to you. But yet still you want us to be the leaders of the community. You got to make up your mind. So we can't keep excusing bad behavior and not want to call it what it is. If you don't want to deal with the rest of development, you don't want to deal with the fact that the lack of maturity is this childlike, delusional Disneyland fantasy of what life is. If y'all not going to deal with that, then what the hell are we going to do in terms of building the community? Because we can only do this so much. You still make the final choice in terms of how you're going to respond to our leadership. Because the leadership is leading. I just showed you just a glimpse of what it was when I asked the brothers about what we plan on doing and how we plan on building. I showed you a glimpse of that. We have these conversations on air and off air, online and offline, all the time. And not only that, we have built networks and are building networks, creating foundational opportunities for the communities we build. The only question is whether or not we're going to build them with you. So, with that said, I want to thank everybody. If anybody that watches this on the replay, appreciate it. You know what I'm saying? Yes, I did this double shot, so y'all get to tell me how it came out. Y'all get to tell me how it came out. All right? And so, until then, war and peace, family. As I always say, if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. So with that, Brother Lester, I am out of here. Let's go.
And there shall come among them a great leader, who with his wisdom and understanding shall break the chains and bonds which bind them, unshackle their wrists and ankles, tear cobwebs from their eyes and ears, and thereby make them free. Ladies and gentlemen, we give you the Negro Moses of the 20th century, Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., in a rally held at Los Angeles, California, June 17th, 1962, as he addressed a gathering on the problems of civil rights and equality. And here is the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., at Zion Hill, as he talks of the dilemma and the challenge.
The dilemma and the challenge facing the Negro today. You will remember that it was in the year of 1619 when the first Negro slaves landed on the shores of this nation. They were brought here from the soils of Africa, and the Negro lived amid this system of slavery for 244 years. For all of these years, he was a thing to be used, not a person to be respected. And even after slavery ended, the Negro discovered that he was confronting a new type of slavery, because racial segregation is nothing but slavery covered up with certain niceties of complexity. And so the Negro lived with physical slavery 244 years. And he has been a victim of racial segregation for almost 100 years. Now, the Negro's dilemma is this, and it's a serious dilemma. In spite of the fact that we have been victims of slavery for 244 years, in spite of the fact that we have lived with segregated conditions for 100 years, the demands of history require that we be as productive, as resourceful, and as responsible as the people who never had these disadvantages. Here we are as a people having experienced political domination, economic exploitation, segregation, and humiliation for well now 344 years, and yet the demands of history make it necessary for us to be as productive and as responsible as the people who never had these experiences. This is our dilemma. He who gets behind in a race must forever remain behind or run faster than the man in front. This is our dilemma. But this dilemma is at one and the same time a great challenge. We are challenged to mobilize our resources, and to mobilize all of the constructive forces that we can muster to make a creative contribution in the life of our nation. And I would like to suggest this afternoon some of the things that we must do to grapple with this dilemma.
Calm down, yo, this your body, it puts in my heart for lockdown, hold up.
I would like to say first that we must develop and maintain a sense of dignity and self-respect. We must not allow anybody or any force to make us feel that we do not count. We must believe in our souls that we are somebody, that we are significant, that we are worthful. Streets of life every day with this sense of dignity and this sense of somebodyness.
Come down, dance with me and take the lead now.
house, I say, me got this one more. As me, I wake up, now she did my mind over.